Good morning. How are you doing? So today we're going to talk about Radio Network for Sky for Business Online. First, a little bit about myself. My name is Hao Yan. I'm a long-time program manager for Sky for Business, and it was Link. Before that, it was OCS, and before that, it was LCS. I was there all, throughout all the name changes. Recently, I become a architect, sort of working with the our media stack and media services. And as part of that, I have some firsthand experience, sort of interacting with the network and see the impact, how big of an impact our network have on the Skype for Business experience. So let's talk about that. When I worked most of my day yesterday in the exhibition hall, talking to some of you guys at our booth, one of the most asked question to me is, you know, people are considering some form of implementing Skype for Business Online and overall Office 365. Where do I start? So my answer to them is that there are many things you need to consider, to plan, to, you know, you need to have a checklist. But one firm item in that list should be the network. Why is that? Oh, sorry, I'm jumping ahead about myself. So what I'm hoping to achieve through this session is a few things. One is that let's quickly take a look at connectivity to Skype for Business. And for that matter, let's take a look overall at connectivity to Office 365 to put some context. And when you think about readiness for the network, we have to set some very concrete goals. So we're going to talk about, hey, what the, at the end of the day, after you have done all the planning, have done all the work, including working with multiple networking teams in your company, what you should achieve. So we talk about performance goals. And then hopefully we get time to talk about a few practical things that, from our experience, that fundamentally impacts the performance of the network. Truth to be told, that when we talk about ready for the network readiness, I couldn't possibly give you a prescription, and you can just take and do exactly that and your network is good, because network is so complex, it's so different from company to company. Hopefully, the takeaway that you will get from this session is some concrete data target that you plan for, some principle, some mindset you should think along the way when you do your network planning, and a few practical takeaways in terms of things like proxies and firewalls and things like that. Okay. All right. Why? Just quickly jump over that. So I think you guys traveled all the way to here, want to hear things about how am I going to give my users the best experience. It happens to be a goal for us as well. So that's a shared goal. In terms of good experience for Office 365, obviously there's a very high correlation between that and the network, the underlying network. And another thing is that network, when we talk about network, it goes, we're talking about all layers of the network stack and application stack and interaction of them. It's very complex. And from practical purpose, there's multiple teams involved from any of the companies. There's this real-time communications team, there's exchange team, there's security compliance team, there's maybe multiple network teams. all those teams need to work together in order to make your network ready. So we obviously need to talk about it, what is the best way to attack it. This specific to Skype for Business, our audio video call experience obviously is a very big part of the overall user experience. And just before I get to the specifics of the SMB network, let's take a little detour and zoom out, take a look at what are the major factors that impact the our media quality. So first, there's the environment. If you have a Skype call in the hallway right there during the very busy hours, obviously there's a lot of noise. Your audio quality is not going to be the best from the ears of the remote users. And our code has abilities to deal with some of that, and most of those will be our users sort of learn how to deal with that, find a quieter place, go to a room and things like that. So we will essentially focus on the next two sets. Those are the big ones. Surprisingly, devices, that we're talking about microphones, speakers, headsets, and cameras, plays a huge role in sort of a quality of the Skype for Business calls. So as a daily operations for Skype for Business, we constantly look at overall quality and the factors that impact the overall quality. We did one study, actually not long ago. We look at devices, specifically building speakers from those laptops, speakers and microphones from the laptops. And we find that if we replace those speakers with a good headset, about half of the bad calls that also drop, that's reliability, actually can be solved, can be fixed. You can guess what's the next half of the problem for the bad quality, that's the network. So device is hugely important. We have run into situations where device stop working in the middle of a call, and obviously your audio stop flowing. We have run into situations where there's a good device, but there's a bad driver, a specific version of the driver that's causing a lot of problems, causing a lot of jitter. So it's very important. Our recommendation, obviously, is use a good device and potentially use a certified device for Skype for Business. And you want to monitor the Skype for Business call quality through the a tool called Call Quality Dashboard. That's the URL. I put that in at the bottom of the slides. This gives you the ability to look at not only the network, but also different devices, device drivers. You can look at how good a quality each version of the device driver contributes if you so choose. And by the way, there's a good session tomorrow morning by our colleague, William Looney, who will talk about using tools like this to sort of monitor and troubleshoot the core quality problems. I strongly recommend you guys to attend that session. Now, finally, network. When I think about network, I think about four factors. We need to be able to connect from A to B. The network delay. How successful is a network in terms of carrying all the packets from A to B, that's the packet loss. And then jitter, finally jitter, how delayed the packet are delivered. each of those have fundamental impact to not only the quality, but reliability. By reliability, just to make that more concrete to you guys, what we look at is are two main metrics. One is how successfully a call can be set up. Out of 100, how many calls are successful? Another metric that we closely monitor is drops. So the call is set up, all the video is flowing, how often the call actually drops without the user intentionally close the call. We have seen many, many different scenarios where network, you know, just does not work, or you know, the packet loss is so high that calls get dropped. So moving on, let's see some diagrams. On the left, there's a neural network. On the right-hand side is Office 365 service. Let's step back a little bit and look at what is Office 365 service. At its core, Skype for Business, as part of Office 365, is a software as a service. And because of that, it has some characteristics. It's a multi-tenant, shared infrastructure, serving through public interfaces. From network perspective, public interface basically means public IP addresses, public domain names, and DNS record, and things like that. And the isolation and the security for each of the tenants is done at application level. This is very important. At the application level, as a common service, we cannot, you know, custom tailor the network connection for each and every tenant and customers. And how you connect to us does not change that fact. Right? Obviously, you have different options to connect to us. Now, Office 365, this application level service, runs inside this Microsoft network that we invest very, very, very heavily in. We have over 100 point of presence all over the world. They're very deeply interconnected. We constantly, actually to be very specific, every 5 minutes, constantly monitor the performance from any given point to any other given point. And we have a major peering and constantly improving that peering with all the major ISPs all over the world. And that is a network. Pretty much all the Microsoft services, including things like Bing, Azure, are running on top of. So when we talk about network, the Microsoft network is what I'm referring to. There's the internet in between. So let's talk about major traffic that is required to connect to Office 365. As a public service, obviously, you need to be able to connect a user sitting on the internet, need to be able to connect to us. From a user sitting inside the your network, the major workloads, the SMTP traffic for Exchange, HTTP traffic for SharePoint, and R traffic for Skype for Business, have to go between your network and our network. And I have a sort of a two-way error on that number two, because for some of the scenarios, actually one very fundamental dependency, the authentication, ADFS, actually needs to go back to your network because you host that. And so there are some other workloads like Exchange email migration also needs to be able to initiate the traffic from our site to your site. But mostly, as the traffic is the other way, it's basically outbound from your network perspective. And then lastly, this is very often sort of a take for granted. In order for any network traffic to happen, you need to first go to DNS, resolve a hostname, resolve IP, and then connect to it. DNS record for Office 365, Skype included, are only published over the internet. So you have to be able to resolve an external DNS from your network. So on this diagram, number 1, 2, and 3 are required traffic to Office 365, okay, regardless of workload. Optionally, some of you might have been familiar with the concept of express route, which is a dedicated, somewhat private connection to from your network to our network. And this is optional. You can essentially use number 4 to replace most of the traffic for number 2. Lastly, security and compliance concerns. I'm sure every single of you guys have a team behind you sort of constantly giving you requirements. So most commonly we have seen from customers is that they put a lot of controls on the boundary of their network. And the level of the control, the complexity of that, the level, the how deep in the stack of that, it really depends on the trust level to the service that you're connecting to. So on the one side of the spectrum, there's public internet, there's foo.com, Facebook, Bing, Google. On the other spectrum of the trust level, you have your internet access. Obviously, you will implement a much less control and inspection on the internet side. Office 365, I would like you guys to think about it of neither. It's offered by Microsoft. When they say we use port 3478 for UDP media traffic, we're not going to use that to transfer some file with credit card in it. There's a certain level of trust. Different customers, again, have different ideas. There's a certain level of trust when you sign up for Office 365. But on the other hand, it's not your asset. It's not part of your internet. So we want you to think about Office 365 somewhere in the middle of the trust spectrum, and preferably move to more towards the internet ones. And this will have, this mindset have a fundamental impact when you have those security and compliance discussions with your internal teams. Sort of balance the requirement from that with the requirement, hey, we need to do something to make sure that the performance of the network is also good, okay? Just a very quick word about the express route. This is another area we get a lot of questions from our customers about. So let me first talk about what is express route and what is not express route. Express route, as I said, it's a private connection, dedicated connection, to Office 365, and that usually offers a controlled and predictable bandwidth and more consistent performance. What is it not? It's not a security option. Just because you have this more dedicated routing, it's a routing after all. It's not secure. It cannot replace security. It's also not a way for you to automatically meet the performance requirements. Remember, when I say what express route is, it does, in most cases, provide you more consistent performance. But in terms of how good that performance is, it really depends on how, what kind of agreement, what kind of capabilities that the internet service provider can give you and what you negotiated. So when should you consider express route? Express Route does offer a few good things. For example, compared to the internet, where nothing is controllable, Express Route provides you service level agreements. If that's important to you, that's a good reason to consider. If you work with the ER providers, the network service providers, and they can give you a performance in terms of delay, packet loss, and jitter from your point A to point B, which is Office 365, that is a very good reason to implement the Express Route. And lastly, quality of service is very important, and Express Route does preserve and honor the QoS markings. And if end-to-end QoS is important to you, again, Express Route is actually the only option to apply QoS between your network and our network. Now let's specifically talk about Skype for Business. Again, this is some context, very, very high level. So let's look at how in which direction the traffic flows. First, very simple scenario, peer-to-peer calls. In this case, you have two users sitting in your network, both of them hosted for Skype for Business Online, and they make a call to each other. The dotted line sort of is our control signal, what we call signaling, to establish a call, to do the handshakes. And they always go back to our service. And by the way, we use the same protocol, SIP, to carry the chat messages. So chat messages always go back to our network. Media traffic, by media I mean audio, video, and screen sharing. Media traffic, we build our software so that we try a lot of different things and find the most optimal path. The most optimal path always will be the more direct, the better. So in this particular case, two guys sitting on the corpnet, there's nothing in between, no firewalls and anything. So most likely we will establish this very direct connection between two of them. They don't even go to Office 365. Now, let's move one user from internal network to the internet, sitting from home, sitting in Starbucks. How does this change? Signaling the dotted line again goes back to Skype for Business. Okay, that does not change. Now we see potentially two firewalls. One is obviously your corporate network. The other one may be the firewall from this user's home. Maybe it's whatever the Starbucks applies. So in this case, they cannot directly connect to each other. They have to use some help. And we happen to have a service called Media Relay, which think about it as a proxy for media. So both of those clients send their media traffic to a media relay in the cloud, and then they can connect that way. By the way, this is in terms of a traffic pattern, this is almost exactly the same traffic pattern when you think about conferences. So think about these two guys join the same conference. The conference is hosted online in that Office 365 cloud. The traffic pattern is exactly the same. When you think about E5, the voice PSDN call capabilities from this user inside your network, the VoIP portion of the traffic goes exactly the same way. From your network goes to the media relay on our network. Here is I'm not going to go through line by line for this, but here are a summary of the sort of the protocol that we use and the destination port that would contact. For our signaling and the data collaboration traffic, data collaboration basically whiteboards, you know, upload a PowerPoint presentation and present and things like that, are mostly TCP and we're secured by the transport layer security. for media, we try different things. We can work with UDP traffic, if that's allowed, and we strongly prefer that. And we also work over TCP. And you see a lot of ports. This is one of the things that our customers often have a question about why we need those, and can I open up less? I'll talk about that when we talk about the firewalls. The answer is yes, by the way. So I want to give you something to define readiness, okay? At least from Skyfall business perspective. And no better thing can be, some very concrete numbers. So I want to give you the concrete numbers. But before that, okay, zooming to the different segments of the network, sort of try to give you why we come up with those numbers. If you look at a very high level, how media flows between the client sitting on your network and our service, it looks like this. So it goes from the traffic goes from the client, potentially goes through the Wi-Fi and your LAN network, and from your LAN network, it will travel through whatever the WAN technology that you have, IPsec, MPLS, to where your internet egress point is. And from that point, it goes through the internet or through the express routes that we just talked about to our network, one particular point of our network. We call that edge, the edge of our network. And then it comes into our service. So when you think about segments, breaking down a problem and solve segment by segment, here's what I want you to think about it. From the client to the edge of our network is something that you either have a direct and total control, or you have a major control working with your network service providers. And obviously, after that point, it's Microsoft Network. We have a great commitment for making that the best in order for us to provide you the good quality. And speaking of the first client to the Microsoft network edge, let's further break them down by the boundary of the network. The Wi-Fi, the LAN, the WAN sitting inside your network, and the internet or the express route connection, okay? So why we do that? Because I probably mentioned this already. We want you to think about division of labor, right? You control something, we control something, both of us work together to make it great, okay? So specifically, we defined a set of criteria for two segments, from client to our network edge end-to-end. I only put latency numbers there. And from your network edge to our network edge. And obviously, you can figure out if one is 100, the other one is 60, and it's 44 inside your network. Here are the actual requirements. By the way, we published this as a documentation online, so the URL, I put it there. So this is something that I want you to take it as a key takeaway. This is how we think network readiness. No matter what you do, you want to have your network meet this performance criteria and be able to handle the peak traffic hours, okay? Let's talk about the, sure. This is totally online, by the way. Yeah. Let's talk about, how do I know whether this criteria is met? Measuring it. First, when do you want to measure it? My first answer And very short answer is always. But more structurally, let's talk about a typical plan, deployment, and operations kind of phases. During the planning phase, obviously, you want to assess your network at least once to understand where I'm good, where I'm not good, where I'm not good, what is the reason, and then hopefully fix it, right, with the network service providers you have. And during the deployment phase, which I understand most of you take a staged, phased kind of approach, at every one of those phases, you want to validate, is my network performance still good? And for those fixes that I put in, are they actually effective, right? And during the operations mode, you know, this is definitely our experience working with the IT department of Microsoft. Our network is not steady. In fact, far from it, right? Every day there's new configurations pushed out because of the requirement from some business unit. And every day, the underlying service provider's performance is also not that constant, so it changes. So my recommendation is that before and after each of the major changes you can expect, you really should have a network assessment done in order to sort of measure how big of an impact this network change is to your user's experience. Okay. And ongoing network performance, even without those changes, I'll give you an example. Just for no reason, just a few days ago, we suddenly get reports from our New York office saying that Skype for Business calls suck, right? Spent lots of hours sort of debugging, working with different teams, finally find out, okay, there is a performance degradation in the network. So those kind of things happens. You would want to have, you know, potentially work with your networking team to have some kind of monitoring to hopefully catch those degradations as soon as you can and then fix it. How do you test it? How do you measure it, rather? This is something that our colleagues, when we talk about Skyfall operations framework, they will talk a lot more in more details about it. But I'll give you a couple of principles. First, use tools recommended by the Skype operations framework. And in the weekend, we also just released a tool that's built by our engineers. One part of my engineering team actually did that. I'm very proud of them. A simple tool that basically tests against those very specific criteria that I just showed you guys. And we have a set of media relays that we deploy for the Skype service all around the world. More specifically, almost one-to-one mapping in terms of location between our media relays and the edge of the Microsoft network. So this is a good target to hit in terms of understanding your edge to our edge kind of performance. And we give you an Anycast IP. When you test against those, the traffic through the magic of Anycast will find the closest location, closest sort of peering point between your network and our network. One very, very important sort of a principle in when think about, you know, either assessing one time or monitoring for ongoing changes in terms of network performance is that you want this data to be representative. In other words, if you do a ping, PS ping, TSP ping, just one time and see, oh, this is good. That doesn't really mean this is good. You want to do this assessment for a longer period of time. My specific recommendation is at least for a week. Given a week, you can cover sort of the downtimes, the very, very busy times, like 9, 10 o'clock on Wednesday. And you want to have a lot of data points so that you can draw a conclusion that majority of our network performance of sessions are good. You obviously can decide what enough means. My recommendation is that during that 7-day period, maybe do a test once every 10 minutes. And then collect all the data, take 90th percentile data, and compare to our criteria. Okay, that is how you, when and how you sort of measure and access our network. Okay, just a quick recap. When we talk about network readiness, so far I talked about two aspects. Being able to connect at all from A to B. And then the three metrics, latency, loss, and jitter in terms of quality and performance. Okay? Lots of things impact those. Now I'm going to go through some of those important ones. First is routing. This is about being able to connect from A to B, right? I already talked about DNS. DNS has to be externally resolvable. That's the only way. IP addresses. As we build out Skype for Business, this, again, the same for Office 365. We expand our service. Obviously, we will update the list of IP address and IP address ranges, which is published online as well. This is an important, very important document you should be familiar with, and potentially sign up for the RSS feed for changes as well. You want to make sure that you're constantly updating the IP addresses. Another important thing about IP address is that public IP address actually is required from you guys. If you think about it, you can send the traffic to us, okay? We need to respond. And when we respond, we from essentially the public internet need to have a public IP address to respond to. Otherwise, the routers in between don't know how to get back to you guys. And there are different ways of providing the IP address, public IP address, obviously. At least two. Some more fortunate companies have lots of public IP addresses. So they just have public IP addresses for everyone. Great. But most commonly, people do things like NET, network address translation. And when you do NET, I strongly recommend you to do SourceNet, meaning that the net mapping changes the source of the traffic, but don't touch the destination IP of the traffic. Okay. Now, routing. I just mentioned that there are alternatives for routing, mainly two. You rely on the public internet to route from A to B, or you do this more dedicated express route to do the routing. And because of that, we publish the IP address for majority of our workloads over both. So you get the flexibility of choose which one to, or prioritize, you know, one over the other in different based on your specific situation in specific locations. There's one line there, last line under the routing head. This actually deserves an entire session with very detailed diagram to talk about it, but I'll talk about it for 10 seconds. Very important, when you do work with your network team to plan your network, think about the symmetry of the IP traffic. In other words, you want the traffic come to us to go out from one point and come back to the same point. So why is that important? I'll give you an example. We have seen customers who have made routing mistakes so that the outgoing traffic goes out through one firewall, And then return traffic comes back to a different firewall. So think about that return traffic. Because it's not initiated from that firewall, the firewall basically thinks this is incoming traffic initiated by some random internet assets. And most companies block random incoming traffic into their network. And therefore, whatever the scenario, including Skype, will not work. So route symmetry is extremely important. This is something that you want to explicitly think about and plan about. Okay. Another very important part of routing is what we call regional routing. The idea is that you want to hand off the traffic from your network to our network as soon as you can. Because, you know, one, we, each of the workload, including Skype, are building their client access servers and services closer and closer to the edge of our network, closer and closer to the users we have, so that they have a good user experience. And when you hand off the traffic to us, we will use the good network. We would like to think that we have the best network in the world to optimize how we get inside our network from A to B. Our services move around. Our software knows how to do A to B better in our network. So that's why. I'll give you a very concrete example. So this is a very typical setup. At the bottom is the Contoso, this company called Contoso, their network. They have many point of presences through North America and Europe, and they're connected through MPLS 1. And they have internet egress in three locations, in Europe and USA. Okay? Now, let's pretend the first two of those lines does not exist. The only internet egress point is in New York. Okay, what happens to a call or to a conference call from a customer, from a user from let's say Zurich to a conference that's hosted in our Europe data centers? Right. So what is the scenario? The scenario is that you are invited to a conference hosted by the partners that you work with. And we just announced that we will soon give you the ability to host the conference close to where the user is located for a given multinational kind of companies. Okay. So let's think about that scenario. What would happen if the Europe internet egress does not exist? The traffic would go like this, right? From Europe to North America, from North America coming into our network and then go back to our Europe data centers. Think about delay and potential packet loss that will be caused through this long journey, right? We don't want to do that. Instead, you want your traffic to follow the green arrow, right? Shortest path, get to us as soon as possible. We also get to our data center as soon as possible. Okay. This is why regional routing is very, very important. We strongly recommend you to think about your internet egress and different points in different local regions. And this is just a variant of, essentially the same thing, but in this case, this Contoso customer choose to use express route to achieve the routing. Again, express route is alternative to the public internet in terms of routing. Now, again, from being able to connect from A to B perspective, okay, for security reasons, many of our customers actually have a whitelist system. They basically specifically whitelist the services and IP addresses that they allow their users to access. If your company is like that, then you want to make sure that the our public IP addresses will be accessible, will be part of that whitelist through whatever the mechanism that you currently have, right? The impact is obviously, if we don't have that, then our service, our user experience would not work. And this actually happened, you know, recently through some of our customers. From port perspective, now let's talk about ports, right? Remember I talked about, you know, for media traffic, we use a list of port ranges. Are these all necessary? Are those all must have? My answer is, you know, it depends on the kind of user experience that that you want to achieve, right? At the very minimum, you know, we follow the standard protocol. We follow the ICE protocol specifically to find whatever the network path that works to connect users to our services. At the very minimum, you can use TCP 443. You can open up only that TCP 443. It probably would be good for your sort of a proof of concept kind of deployment, smaller scale deployments. But we do know that real-time media traffic does not work extremely well over TCP because of the overheads, the retries that TCP controls. We would much prefer UDP. So what is the best, the next best level, better level, rather? On top of the TCP 443, I would strongly recommend you guys to work with your network engineers to open up access to our destination on UDP port 3478. This gave us ability to at least to allow the traffic from your client to connect in some fashion to that media relay I just talked about, hosted in our network. Through UDP, real-time traffic really works better over UDP, both in terms of reliability and quality. Okay, now, the best is what I just listed in that table, right? On top of these two ports, also open up a port range for audio, a port range for video. And why is that? Because then we have the flexibility to optimize the media path, right? If you open up 3478, I can draw a diagram with you, with whoever interested offline. But essentially, remember I said the more direct, the better. So if you open up only one port, most likely the two endpoints of this media session would require the help of two media relays. And then those two media relays talk to each other. That's how you set up a session. When you open up all those ports, then we have the possibility of requiring only one of them to help. And obviously, that's more direct. We prefer that. We talked about NAT already, and we talked about source NAT is recommended. So in terms of best practice or think about planning, there's only one thing you should put on the checklist in terms of NAT. This is extremely important for our media traffic. That is, the NAT address mapping doesn't have to be always constant. We do not recommend that. You do not want to statically map one IP internally to a public IP externally. That's going to be unmanageable. But you do want to make sure that for each given session, each given call, a conference from one user to our servers, throughout the duration of that session, your mapping does not change. If it changes, again, that firewall behavior I just talked about, rejecting the incoming traffic will come in, and our scenario will break. Okay. Let's talk about the HTTP proxies. This is another sort of common practice we see from our customers. Let's get one thing straight. We do support HTTP proxies. Our client does do proxy discovery and then try to sort of send our traffic through the HTTP tunnel. But for best reliability and quality, we still recommend direct IP routing. Again, come back to the principles that I talk about. The more direct, the better. And on top of that, if you think about, we build Skype, you know, with security in mind from day one. So our media traffic, our signaling traffic, is already end-to-end encrypted. Having a proxy in the middle, you cannot look at the content anyways. So what is the value that a proxy would add? You have to think about that. Also, proxies, when you think about a large-scale solution, at the point, whenever you plan to get to, you know, 100,000 users or 300,000 users for some companies, whether proxy infrastructure can scale is a question. And just a quick anecdote. One of my exchange friends told me that for his client, well, this really depends on the usage pattern. For his client, at any given time, from Outlook alone, he has 20 connections to Exchange services. So from one client, one user, 20 connections. That's 20 proxy sessions. So scalability is also a problem when you do proxy. Sorry. So our recommendation is that if you can, work with your security and compliance team to see whether you can bypass proxy for Skype traffic. And the way to bypass proxy is that look at our IPs and URLs published online again. Modify your pack file, and I have an example there, to basically have the traffic targeted to us, not going through the proxy. Okay, go direct. So VPN is also an important factor in this network thinking, right? This is more about users not sitting in the corp net, they're sitting at home, sitting at any given point on the internet. If they connect through VPN, as you know, VPN is a tunnel technology. It does encryption, it gives you the transport layer security. And we encrypt, VPN also encrypt. This double encryption obviously creates things like delay. It potentially loses packet as well. And also, more than likely, you guys have, if you have VPN deployed, you have limited point of VPN access points. That affects how media flows as well if you force media to go over the VPN tunnel. Again, bring back this very, very high level media flow, right? That user sitting on the internet, if they connect through VPN, the media traffic would look like this. Okay? Go back to whatever the access point you have, go through your the network security stuff, and then go back to the internet. Two segments of the internet in this case. Why do that? If the user already can directly connect to our service. More direct, one segment of the internet, we prefer that. This is probably the more sort of important part. In terms of network performance and quality, most of the problems that I talk about, the long latency, the big packet loss, are caused due to congestion, okay? What are the ways to avoid a congestion? Having more bandwidth, right? How much bandwidth is enough? Well, I would recommend you to use our planning tool, the bandwidth planning tool, which is basically allow you to specify your usage pattern, right? How many users in which location, how often they do peer-to-peer phone calls, how often they join a conference, and things like that. Based on that, we have some formula to calculate the amount of bandwidth you need from each location. So strongly recommend you guys, when you plan your network, this is one of the first things that you should do. Okay? Well, I just put a table of, you know, roughly, just for fun, roughly, or, you know, all our different codecs in different conditions, how much bandwidth they consume. But really go back to our tools, it's much easier to just input the usage pattern than calculating the raw numbers yourself. Okay. All right. So another way to deal with congestion, obviously, is have some kind of prioritization for different kinds of traffic that you have on your network. That is a quality of service. Right? Use DHCP markings to put different traffic in different queues. And then when congestion happens, hopefully the most critical part of our communication, audio, would be prioritized, put in the highest priority queue so that it gets through. And you know, a large file download can wait and put in the best effort queue. I would like to think about the cost marking and implement cost as an insurance policy. You would hope that you would never trigger it, because why do you want congestion? But when congestion happens, this insurance suddenly becomes extremely important. It makes sure the most critical part of your user experience actually works, okay? But that said, it does not replace, QoS does not replace proper bandwidth planning and proper provisioning of your network. QoS, whatever the technology, cannot work magic if you have a 128 kilobits per second kind of a network connectivity between any points, okay? It cannot work magic. I would encourage you to think about bandwidth planning, QoS, two aspects to solve the same problem. They go hand in hand, okay? I'm not going to go through the details. This is documented online. Here are the QoS markings that we recommend in that table. Now, I talked about a lot of things. Let me quickly summarize for you guys. Network performance is key to a good Skype for Business experience. You want to measure your network, monitor your network before, during, and after the implementation. Okay. Regional IP-based routing works better than HTTPS. Blocking everything else, just allow HTTP proxy. Regional routing works much, much better in terms of user experience. And as a note, ExpressRoute is an optional routing mechanism that can replace some part of the internet traffic. Very important, it replaces some part of the internet traffic, does not replace all. Remember that DNS resolution, and also I think I forgot to mention about it, CRL, that is a certificate revocation list. We have to go to the internet public search authority to check whether your certificate is valid or not. Okay? ExpressRoute cannot replace the traffic for that. Allow, for Skype for Business specifically, allow TCP and UDP. UDP specifically. That would give you a better experience than just open up TCP 443. And bandwidth and cost planning goes hand in hand. Lastly, we would recommend you to bypass VPN. I think I forgot to mention, the way to bypass VPN, at least one of the ways, is to implement so-called split tunnel. The idea is that you get the list of IP ranges that Skype has, whitelist that, exclude that from the network routes for VPN so that it goes directly from the client to over the internet to us. With that, I'm happy to take any questions. There's actually a mic on each side, I believe. Please go to the mic to ask questions.
Hi. So you said about quality of service to mark the packets, obviously, because the one thing when you're doing an on-premise Skype for Business implementation, they tell you is have end-to-end quality of service. It's really important. So we can mark the packets going outbound, because you can do that with group policy on the actual device.
Right.
But the, coming back in, are you suggesting that we have our edge devices mark those packets coming back? Is that how you would implement it? Because obviously, coming back in, it's coming off the internet, which is not going to have any quality of service on it. So the return leg on our network, if somebody's doing something crazy and downloading an ISO or something on and maxing out the bandwidth, you need that quality of service to make sure that everyone's calls are okay. Is that what you're suggesting? The edge devices mark that for
us? That's a very good question. So yes, so think about the calls, at least in your network, going in, coming, going out and coming in. How do you ensure both directions get marked, right? So we actually thought about this. So far, we're thinking the recommendation being that, you know, we for Skype for Business, we have distinct ports from the client for audio, video, and application sharing. Okay, think about two directions. Going out, you want to do the cross marking based on the source ports. That's how we know that, because we control the ports. We know those are 50,000 to 50,019 will be audio. So you can use whatever the mechanism, GPO or mark it on the router based on the source port. On the return direction, if you can, I would recommend turn it around, do destination port-based marking. That probably would at least technically solve the problem of how do you mark it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. I think, is that the only way? Like, are there any other options we should consider, or is that the only way?
So far, that's the way that we have thought about, yes.
All right, that's fine. Thank you.
Cool, thanks. Yeah, please.
Hi there. Yes, my question is, for these types of deployments, what percent of companies or what rule of thumbs do you have as far as them being able to do this all themselves versus having to work with a partner, let's say like a Modality? And number two is, can companies usually deploy this without buying third-party tools like Nectar and Unified Square, or are those tools very, very commonly deployed?
Okay. Very valid question. So the answer to your first question, whether a company can do it themselves, it obviously depends on the capability of the company, right? Some customers can do it, and they prefer to do everything themselves. And some customers cannot. So they have to work with managed service providers to go through the whole life cycle. And this sort of the same answer to your second question as well. Speaking of that, I would have to put a plug. There's a couple of sessions this afternoon on our Skype operations framework. Right? It gives you a sort of a systematic approach to describe how to do it, either by yourself or through as a managed service providers. That is something that that sort of guides you through all the different life cycles of the deployment. I strongly recommend those sessions. Please.
You mentioned specifically about helping performance via the split tunnel VPN to get users kind of more directly to their home base. Is that supported also on like Link Server 2013 on premise or some of the older versions of Link and Skype for Business?
Yeah. So this is the same recommendation that we have for our on-premise product as well. So in that case, the destination IP address obviously will be the public side of your own Link or Skype for Business deployment.
From the edge server?
Yes, edge servers. Yes.
Thank you.
By the way, the support is not like that. We support that VPN technology, right? This is something that we do not control. This is rather a best practice recommendation that we have for you guys.
certainly. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? The question is this stack online? Yes, I believe that as part of Ignite, I think they will just publish every single deck. That's my understanding. Yeah, if not, oh, okay, good. Here you go. And also feel free to reach out to me. My email is firstname/lastname@microsoft.com. So any questions or you need this a copy of this deck, send an email to me. Okay, thanks very much. Thank you.